before we proceed with your next witness, Commissioner Falk has, we've got marked as PSC Exhibit Number 5, Commissioner Falk's resume or CV essentially, and I'd like to maybe get that offered into the record. And before doing so,
I guess if I could have Commissioner Falk just identify what's been pre-marked as PSC Exhibit Number 5.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor, for the folks out there. Basically, what I thought over lunchtime is I wanted to put in the record the background that I have on soil science, water hydrology, a master's and a doctorate out of NDSU related to, I think, a lot of the issues today. And so I will be using that background as we make determinations and make a final ruling on this case. And I think it's very appropriate to get in the record because at some point in time, another party may review this work, and it shows that we've got also significant credentials as well as the other experts have been offered up in this hearing.
Okay. Mr. Biella, any objection to PSC Exhibit Number 5?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
No, Your Honor. Okay.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
Okay. PSC Exhibit Number 5 is admitted, and Mr. Biella, you can call your next witness.
You're called Don Steffen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Steffen. Before you testify, I'm required to give you the oath as well, an advisor of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony. It's punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Biella.
Thank you. Please state your name and business address.
Don Steffen, 6502 17th Street, Southwest, Zap, North Dakota.
And where were you born and raised?
I grew up on a farm near Parshall, North Dakota.
And what is your education after high school?
I received a Bachelor of Science degree in Civil Engineering from the University of North Dakota in 1986.
And what is your position with Coyote Creek Mining Company?
I'm the engineering and environmental manager. I'm responsible for obtaining the required permits and making sure our operations operate in accordance with all the permits.
And what is your experience with other mines in Mercer County, North Dakota?
I worked at Indian Head Mine from 1990 to 1995. I worked at the Freedom Mine from 1995 to 2013, and I've been employed at Coyote Creek since February of 2013.
And what were your job duties at Indian Head?
Initially, I assisted with the engineering functions of the mine. In April of 1992, the mine ceased coal production and started reclaiming the mine. During this period, I assisted with the reclamation activities of the mine and managed all the environmental functions until the mine was fully reclaimed in the fall of 1993. And it was at that time, in the fall of 93, I became the last employee of the mine, and I continued to oversee all the reclamation, all the revegetation activities, the bond release activities, until it was fully released from bond in 2005.
And what were your job duties at Coteau?
I performed various engineering and environmental duties, functions, and served as environmental manager the last 2 years I was employed there.
And how many years have you worked on land restoration, reclamation on mine lands in Mercer County?
Over 20 years.
And where was the Indian Head Mine located in Mercer County?
The mine is located from an area about 4 miles south of Zap, North Dakota, and extended through the years all the way to about a half mile northwest of Beulah.
And how far is that from the new Coyote Creek Mine?
About 3 miles to the north.
And showing you what has been marked as Exhibit 2, would you please identify it?
It's a series of charts named Indian Head Mine Reclaimed Land Productivity.
And is the data used to prepare this exhibit obtained from records available to the public?
Yes, it is.
And who prepared the exhibit?
I prepared the exhibit.
I would offer Cow Creek Exhibit 2.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 2 is admitted.
And what does this exhibit demonstrate with respect to reclaimed land productivity at the Indian Head Mine?
It shows that Indian Head Mine's reclaimed native grassland productivity exceed the required PSC reclamation standards by 34%. The reclaimed cropland productivity exceeded the reclaimed or the required standards by 25%. And the reclaimed hayland and tame pasture lands exceeded the standards by 37%.
So this would demonstrate that the reclamation lands were more productive. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are the PSC's productivity standards for reclaimed native grassland derived using NRCS or Natural Resource Conservation Service production values?
Yes, they are.
They're not values established by a mining company, are they?
That's correct. They're not.
And in your vast experience in native grassland restoration in Mercer County at Indian Head and Freedom Mine, have the native grasslands been restored to at least equal extent of cover and productivity to the natural vegetation of the area?
Yes, they have.
Your Honor, I'm going to now show Mr. Stephan Exhibit 9. This is a CD of the entire mining application. I've discussed this with counsel for PSC and for Mr. Voigt, and they were agreeable that we could just enter one CD as an exhibit.
Okay. Mr. Broughton, is that correct? Any objection to admission of the CD version of the application?
No objection. I just want to clarify this is the final application.
It's the permit 1302, yes?
Well, there were a number of revisions. I just want to make sure this is the final.
Yes, it is.
Okay. No objection.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Zacko?
I have no objection.
Okay. Exhibit number 9 is admitted.
We have no further questions of this witness, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
You need.
You can hold on to it. I'll get it after you're done.
Mr. Stephens, in what year were the acres at the Indian Head Mine, specifically the native grasslands, disturbed?
Starting in 1922 till 1992.
What was the required revegetation period for the native grasslands at that mine?
It varied. I mean, that mine was experimented. It had every law period involved, 69, 71, 73, 75, 77, 78 interim, and the current law. Most of the land I would dealt with was the current law stuff, post the SMACRA stuff here.
And so on the exhibit, it states that there's 3,800 acres reclaimed.
Yes.
Was that all acreage that was put under bond by the PSC?
Yes, 100% would have been under bond. And it was 2,475 of that would have been current law. 2,475 of that 38 is what I would call current law.
Okay. And do you know what the standards were for the other acreage that was released?
There were standards, probably the 73 law. There was a little of everything. I had 71 law, 73 law, 75 law, 77 law, 70 in interim. Some of that was 1,400 acres of it, was that pre-SMACRA law stuff.
So 1,400 acres of land that was reclaimed at this mine was released from bond under standards that were pre-SMACRA?
That's correct.
Do you know what proportion of those 1,400 acres were native grassland?
I don't know what portion, but probably that average about 60% of the land was native throughout there. And none of that production was shown in those charts. That is all post-SMACRA, the production shown there. Those charts are strictly post-SMACRA production.
So was the total acreage mined here 3,800 acres? Is that right?
Yep, through, I'll say, since 71 disturbance, right around there, 70, 71. Whenever we started adopting state laws.
I guess my question is, at what point did you start disturbing land at the Indian Head Mine?
It started in 1922. It's an old mine, surface coal mine, the oldest in the state. 1922, we started mining coal there. North American was involved since 1957.
And you obtained final bond release on the last acres in what year?
2005.
How does the size of this mine compare to other coal mines in the in North Dakota?
It's smaller.
And how does the duration of mine from initial disturbance to final reclamation compare to other mines in the state?
It's the same criteria. It's very similar.
So you're saying that other mines have, from the time of disturbance to final bond release of the last acre, 83 years is common?
We were releasing lands continuously through that process. It wasn't that it was all released that last year. You'd have to look at the records. Every year there was applications and releases every year.
So it was a relatively small mine that was reclaimed over the course of 83 years.
Prior to 1969, there was no reclamation laws. There was no laws at all prior to 69. So really it only applied since 1971 on.
That's when reclamation work started?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, no further questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no questions.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman?
Thank you, Your Honor. Are questions about specific grasses and crops and that sort of thing for you or for Ms. Flath?
I would say Sarah's going to be having a lot of testimony on that. So if you're talking grass production, native grassland standards, best answer is this. I can try. I mean, if you want to run by me, but most likely I will defer them to her.
Oh, well, we don't want to take up more time than necessary.
Okay.
We only want to take up the time we need, not more than necessary. Casey, when he testified, had said that the PSC said that on his land it's 92% native. Does that sound right to you?
It's, and Sarah has that number, but yes, 92% of his disturbed land is native grasslands.
Okay.
Native grass, 92%, 5% hay, and I think 3% other, and then like 0.3% crop. That says disturbed acres.
The soil health issues for you?
Sarah, again, okay. Yep. She's got a lot of testimony on that.
All the rest of my questions apply to Sarah's testimony then, except for this one. Repeat for me how many acres were at Indian Head that were under SMACRA laws that are bonded out and bonded.
We reclaimed, under SMACRA, 2,475 acres, I believe was the 9 acres. Current law, SMACRA, reclaimed. There was more permitted. I think there was 710 undisturbed, so we're like 3,000 permitted under SMACRA.
In the first day of testimony, I thought I heard it said that only 2,000 acres have ever been bonded out in North Dakota, I thought sounded wrong.
Yeah,
but 15, so you were disputing that just based on Indian Head alone.
Yeah, there's 15,000 or more. I'm sure.
Thank you. No other questions.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Mr. Stefan, thank you. Just kind of a few random questions following up from things that we've heard over the last couple of days of testimony. So I apologize if there's sort of no certain order here. One of the complaints that we heard, some from the public and some from Mr. Voigt and his attorneys is that, and his experts, is the questioning the long-term productivity of reclaimed land. What's your experience with that? You've actually gone through bond release on an entire mine. What's your understanding of how those lands are functioning, the reclaimed lands today, in terms of productivity?
I think they're functioning fine, far as I know. And we tracked it through the bond release process. Obviously, there was tracks of land. We tracked it for many, many years, even past the 10 years. There was tracks we kept longer than 10 years, isolated pieces. And so there was a lot of that land that was tracked for many, many years.
Do you, this is a snapshot of at bond release?
Those would have been qualified for bond release usually at that time, the last 2 years of the vegetative clock. At that time, the standards have changed a little bit.
Okay, so this doesn't capture anything after that. You don't really have data after
the
fact.
We have no control over that land.
Right. Understood.
Indian Head Mine didn't own any land hardly at all, maybe 10%. We worked with the producers and tenants and all that property.
What about compaction? That's an issue that we heard discussed, a big concern that's once it occurs, it's pretty difficult to fix. Could be caused by the heavy equipment. Tell me your experience with this. What do you guys, how do you avoid it? How do you fix it? And how big of a deal is it to you to try to avoid compaction?
I mean, we always are looking for it, but I don't think we're going to have a big problem. I don't think it's a problem. There's isolated instances where there is compaction. We'll be working with our operations to avoid those situations, but there's access roads, haul road areas where we're concentrating our traffic. But overall, I don't think there's a compaction problem out there except in those isolated instances. And then if there is a compaction problem, during our grade approval process, there is a time frame when we do inspect the surface before a respread, the grade approval process. That's one time the Public Service Commission comes out, drives the whole area, looks for those isolated situations, and make recommendations. If they see something, they want us to scarify it, rip it, do other things. We can do it at that time prior to respread during the grade approval process. Mm-hmm.
So tell me what the – you talk fast. What is the solution? If you discover compaction in this process, how do you fix that?
We can do some deep ripping or scarifying, both.
Scarify
it like a really heavy disc. Rome disc, it usually goes down 8 to 12 inches.
Okay.
That well. And then there's also ripping options of blades or dozers, which can go down 10 feet if need be.
All right. What is your company's incentive or disincentive to complete bond release on time? There's been concerns that the bond release drags on too long. And so tell me what kind of incentive do you have to complete it on time or a disincentive to not?
We're carrying a lot of bond. Coyote Creek in this situation is going to have a surety bond, which is, there is a premium. You pay a pretty stiff premium to hold a bond. So you don't want to hold it any longer than you have to. It is very expensive to have a bond on this property. Right now we're only at a $5 million bond, but that's going to go up every year, and we'll be seeing $10, $12 million in bonding very soon. So it's very expensive, and it's just our obligation to get bond release also. We don't want to hold on to it. We want it back.
So it's costly for you to keep the bond longer than you...
It is. It will be at Coyote Creek. Yes, it is.
And then another... Another question. One of the public members of the public said that if the... she actually called it a ruse, the reclamation ruse, if it was working... then the land would be coming out of bond release. What's your response
to that question again?
The member of the public claimed that this, and as an example, that the reclamation process isn't working, bond release isn't being met. So what's your response to that, that lands aren't coming out of bond release on time?
A lot of times, if they're not coming out, it's not production related. And a lot of times those are isolated tracks, small tracks, not adequate parts. They're needed for other areas on the mine. They might be associated with a safety concern very close to our active operations, but most of them are isolated tracks in the middle of a 50,000-acre permit area, so a lot of them are isolated or small.
Do you, and this might not be a fair question for you, but do you have any sense of your company's lands in North Dakota, what percent of them are behind in bond release?
I don't. I think PSC has that information. You guys generate that, so the chart would come from you. You're the one.
I'll ask.
I don't generate chart. You have it.
Jim, I hope you have that in your testimony. All right. And then do you have thoughts on the question? We talked to the last witness about this, but the availability that the water before should be, water resources before should be similar to the water resources afterwards. What's your position on that?
Yes. If there is any diminishing of any water resources, we are obligated to replace it. That is right in our permit. Any diminishing of quality or quantity of water, we are required to replenish it.
In your experience, has that been a problem for you to accomplish?
No, it hasn't. We've replaced them with other sources, you know, groundwater wells, whatever. It depends on the source. If it's a source, if they had a water well that we have to mine through, we're going to replace that water well. We put back all their systems, equal or better quantities and quality of it that they had. If we have to mine through the well, we will replace it.
And knowing the water resources that exist in this area and with Mr. Voigt's land, you don't have any concerns about being able to replace that?
No, I don't. He's most of his operation right now, he utilizes the groundwater system, very elaborate, very good system, put a lot of money into it. We're going to replace that system for him and keep it maintained during the mining. It's our obligation to keep it going, too, during mining. There is some old springs and areas, but talking to the local farmers or ranchers there, Casey himself, they weren't very reliable. They wanted better reliable sources, so they went to this system. So he's got a nice system, very, very nice.
Mm-hmm. And then you've been involved in the reclamation for many, many years now, the same time period almost that some are claiming that the standards haven't changed or the procedures haven't changed, that they're virtually unchanged in the state. Is that a fair review of our reclamation?
Standards, I mean, Jim can talk about the changes, but I think the last time the standards themselves that I'm aware of, the veg document was changed in 2003, but it is updated frequently, the vegetation document with latest and greatest technical information, research information.
You've got to slow down.
I would agree with you. And I'm not even trying to type.
Jim can answer that better, but yes, there is continually improvements towards that, and the mines can make improvements too, obviously. We check our operations. We look at what we're doing. We're always looking for better ways, yes.
Looking for and implementing or just...
Implement. I mean, we've applied a lot of stuff towards our native grassland establishment, rotational grazing programs. We're out there increasing the number of water sources on them. We're looking at... trying to keep the invasive species down by monitoring that early in the stages of life or avoiding actually the first augmented seeding. You know, that's one way we're going to be looking at Casey's property is to not seed that first year, let the introduced grasses that are on his property already, that seed bank, reestablish, kill it off, and then seed our grasses. So we will probably be administering something like that to give the land 1 year. It's going to postpone bond release a year because we're not going to seed it for a year, but that's just a benefit I think we got to do to eliminate some of that seed bank that may be on his property.
Okay. I think that concludes my questions for now. Thank you. Okay.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Don, you and I should get going as fast as we can and see how the reporter keeps up.
Okay.
We're just so excited to get it out there. I'm with you. Just a couple questions, Don. When we look at the chart, Exhibit 2, I mean, in area cropland, you've exceeded standards by 25%. Native grasses, 34%. Hayland, 37%. How do you think anyone can claim that you're not doing better? I mean, the data is striking.
I don't know. I guess I can't answer that.
Okay. In your the only thing I thought of is how do you aggregate your data? Do you take your production? Do you take each little acre, and then how do you get to your 25%? There must be some that's 30% and some.
Yes, it's a tract and weight average by the area that it contributes. So one tract might be 75 acres, next might be 150, but that's a weighted average through all the various tracts.
So what would be the range of that that you think that would be occurring?
I don't know. I mean, I put this number together in 2005, and it's just a chart I've had since 2005. I don't know the range. I mean, it depends on the land use. Indian Mine wasn't real productive cropland area. It was marginal. Probably should have never been broke. I mean, it was marginal cropland at best. So a lot of that land was only capable of county average producing maybe 20 bushel the acre.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a feel for, because I would look at that. This data to me is, it'd be hard to argue against it. But if there's areas that where there was, you know, 1% increase, maybe some areas that didn't have any increase, actually had decreases, would there be any areas?
No decrease. It wouldn't meet bond release. So.
Okay. So in this data, everything was increased.
Yes. It has to be equal or, at least 0% or 0.1% higher.
Okay. So the 25%, it wouldn't be out of the realm of something could have increased as much as 35% for the first one and having some stratification back.
Yes, some might have been 5%. There might be some 35s. This is a weighted average, yes.
But to the point, every bit improved some level.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Biello?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Broughton?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Steffens, do you have similar data for other mines in North Dakota?
I do not.
When was the last acre disturbed at the Indian Head Mine?
Disturbed? We shut the mine down April 29th of 92, so that'd be the last coal removal. I don't know how you say disturbed.
You mentioned that it's costly to keep a bond in place. Do you have portions of your bond released prior to final bond release?
Yes, of course. Did at Indian Head every year there was bond release occurring and diminution of the bond amount.
More specifically, if we take a certain field, for example, if that field is 5 years along in the revegetation, are you able to get some of the bond released on that field prior to final bond release?
Yes, you can get partials, first, second, and third stage. There's four stages of bond release.
Okay. Yep. And so how much of the bond is released at third stage percentage-wise?
It drops it. I'm going by old numbers, Jim, but it used to be so much per acre. I want to say they hold $508 on native, and I don't remember. It's 12 years ago. I don't remember the exact. It's the percentages. It's written right in the regs, so much percent for each stage. I don't remember them top of my head. They're in the regs. Spelled out really defined there.
But for each stage, up to stage four, you get a certain amount of that bond released.
Yes.
And for stage three bond release, for example, what do you have to achieve to get there?
I think you got a native grass and you got to have cover, adequate control erosion, cropland, just basically. I think you got to be in a rotation program of cropland at third stage three. But native, it was at least cover standard. I don't remember for sure anymore. I didn't brush up on it before coming here.
So at stage three, I know you don't recall specifically, but would at least more than half of that bond be released?
Stage three, yes it is.
And at that point, you have not proven productivity at all?
No, but there's observations. I mean, there are weekly or monthly inspections conducted that would show how it's producing and how it's going and walking around, but there's definite inspection involved of the property during that stage.
Do the mines that North American runs keep production records prior to stage four bond release?
Yes.
Do they at stage three bond release?
Yes, they would. There's records all the way from probably early on, year three, typically. We start tracking production if it's tracked.
So you could get to stage three bond release and have a significant amount of that bond amount released, correct?
On that tract of land, that's possible, yes.
And if you could improve productivity on it, then that would stay under bond until you could.
That's correct.
Do you know who Marty Reich is?
Marty, yes.
Did she own land that was mined by the Indian Head Mine?
Her father-in-law did, yes.
Okay. Has she made complaints to you about sinkholes on that land?
Yes. Yes.
How recently has she made complaints?
I talked to her September, probably.
And did you hire a contractor to do any work in her field filling in those sinkholes?
Yes.
And when did you do that?
The work was done here a couple weeks ago.
And this is land that's been released from final bond release.
Yes, some old law areas, yeah, old law areas. Priest Macra.
No further questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no questions.
Okay. Commissioner Christman?
No questions.
Commissioner Fedorch? Commissioner Kalk? Mr. Biella, anything further for this witness?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. You can step down. Mr. Biella, you can call your next witness.
Call Sarah Flath.
Okay. Good afternoon, Ms. Flath. Required to give you the oath, and I'm sure you're aware, having sat through it, but I am required to advise you of the penalty for perjury, Class C felony in North Dakota, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both, and being advised of the penalty for perjury. Do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Please state your name and business address.
Sarah Flath, 6502 17th Street Southwest, Zapp, North Dakota, 58580.
By whom are you employed?
The Coyote Creek Mining Company.
And what is your position with Coyote Creek Mining Company?
I'm the senior environmental specialist.
And what other coal mines have you worked at?
Previously, I worked for the Coteau Properties Freedom Mine.
And what is your background in education after high school?
I was raised on a third-generation ranch near Amadon, North Dakota. I received my Bachelor's of Science in Range Science from NDSU. And I then received my Master's of Science in Rangeland Ecosystem Science from Colorado State University.
And are you, it sounds like you're an expert in grasslands and reclamation. Could you please talk about your history in that field?
Yes, my interest started when I was very young. While in high school, I placed fourth in the nation at the National Range Judging Competition. While in college, I worked for the NDSU Animal Nutrition Lab and the NDSU Range Science Department. I held various offices in the NDSU Range Club, including president, and through it, I competed in the undergraduate range management exam, and I presented a paper at the Society for Range Management's annual meeting. After completing my master's degree, which focused on soil water and infiltration on rangelands, I stayed active in professional organizations. I am the current president of the North Dakota chapter of the Society for Range Management, and I have held other offices in our state chapter for many years. I have presented a paper on soil respread at the annual meeting of the American Society of Mining and Reclamation. I help organize the North Dakota Reclamation Conference and the professional meeting hosted by the North Dakota Society for Range Management. I'm also a certified wetland delineator. I have attended multiple meetings and training events, and I maintain professional contacts to stay current in my field.
I would offer the further testimony of Ms. Flath as an expert in vegetation and grasslands.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Okay. The testimony of Ms. Flath will be received as that of an expert in those areas. You can proceed.
Thank you. Sarah, what are your job duties with Coyote Creek?
I coordinate baseline data collection. I prepare permits, including the reclamation provisions of our permit. I manage reclaimed lands and coordinate management with landowners and day-to-day environmental compliance.
And did you assist in preparation of the permit application of the Coyote Creek Mine to the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
And what parts did you specifically work on?
I prepared the introductory and Surface Owner Protection Act compliance sections, the post-mining land use and revegetation sections, components of the soils handling and mining sections, and I edited and compiled baseline vegetation, soils, water, and wildlife data that I received from consultants.
And is grassland restoration one of the areas you are responsible for at Coyote Creek?
Yes.
And what is your experience with reclamation when you worked at the Freedom Mine?
I've been involved in all phases of grassland reclamation, starting with soil salvage and continuing through the process to bond release. For 8 years, starting in 1999, I was involved with or oversaw revegetation and management of the reclaimed land, including seeding, grazing plans, data collection, and assembling bond release packages. For the 6 years following that, starting in 2007, I was a planner for operations, which included planning the soil salvage, grading, and respread operations.
And showing you what is in marked Exhibit 3, who prepared this exhibit?
I did.
And would you please describe it?
It's the Coteau Reclaimed Land Productivity Chart. It shows that Coteau's reclaimed native grassland productivity exceeded the PSC standards by 24%, the hayland by 25%, and the cropland by 13%.
We would offer Coyote Creek Exhibit 3.
Mr. Broughton?
I object to the foundation. I think we need to know a little bit more about where these numbers come from.
Will you be following up, Mr. Biella? And I mean, do you want to do that right now?
I'll do it right now.
Okay.
Can you tell us how you prepared it, from what data?
The data set came from part of public record bond release packages that have been submitted to the Public Service Commission.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
Could I just ask a couple questions on it?
Sure, go ahead.
How many acres of land have been reclaimed at Coteau?
I'd have to defer to Jim Deitch's table that I believe he's going to be presenting later.
Does this document represent all of the land at Coteau that was disturbed?
No, it only represents the land that bond release has been achieved on, because I wanted to use a data set that had been reviewed and was part of the public record already.
Okay. No objection.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No objection.
Okay. Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 3 is admitted.
How do the land uses compare to those at Freedom Mine compared to those on the Voigt land?
We project that a little over 2,000 acres will be disturbed on Voigt-owned land. The same three land uses are found on Voigt's land. However, 92% of his disturbed land is native grassland, 5% is hayland, less than 1% is cropland, and then 3% is made up by their minor land uses.
And how far is the Freedom Mine from the Coyote Creek Mine?
About 15 miles.
And are the soil types and precipitation found at both mines comparable due to this proximity?
Yes, precipitation is very similar. Regarding soils, both mines have some sodic clay areas, some sandy areas, and some areas in between. Soils at the north end of the Coyote Creek mine are relatively thick and sandy textured, while some of the soils at the south end of the mine are shallow and sodic. Coteau also contains some sandy and some shallow sodic soils.
Showing you what is marked Exhibit 4, would you please identify it?
It's the Revegetation Success Standards document. It's a guidance document published by the North Dakota Public Service Commission.
And is this document used in preparation of the mining permit application?
Yes.
Your Honor, I believe that the Voigt had introduced a very similar exhibit, but just to make certain that all the appropriate pages were included, we would ask that ours be admitted at this time.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No objection.
Okay, Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 4 is admitted.
Well, sir, when we start talking about the mine permit application, one of the terms that comes up is a reference area. Could you describe what a reference area is?
Yes, reference areas are located on undisturbed native grassland, and they're used to compare reclaimed lands to undisturbed lands and evaluate reclamation success.
And how are these reference areas selected?
There were 9 sites sampled on Voigt's land that were sampled for the permit to provide pre-mine information. They were chosen to represent the variability of the Voigt's land, including soils, slope, and species composition. Of those nine, most will be disturbed by mining. The proposed reference areas are three of the sites that are located outside of our anticipated disturbance boundary. However, the reference areas shown in the permit are only proposed locations at this point. They are still subject to review and approval by the PSC.
Now, is it correct that reference areas can be changed, including with Mr. Voigt's input, should he so desire?
Yes, with PSC approval.
So these reference areas are used to sort of establish a baseline, is that correct, for reclamation?
Correct.
When reclamation occurs 15 or 20 years later?
Correct.
Now, during Mr. Voigt's testimony, he expressed concern and believes that reclaimed grasslands are of lower quality and result in reduced cattle production. Do you agree?
No.
Why don't you agree?
Regulation requires that non-native grass species must not be present in quantities that may be considered detrimental to the native grassland use. Coyotes management plans will work towards minimizing the presence of introduced species on reclaimed land. Standards used to evaluate success of reclaimed native grassland are very strict and complex. The PSC documents explaining the methodologies, and they are part of Exhibit 4, are 17 pages long. Standards consider production, cover, seasonality, and diversity. Part of the purpose of having standards relating to seasonality and diversity are to assure that the reclaimed plant community functions similarly to a pre-mine community and are of equivalent quality. As an indication of how strict these standards are, if they were applied to the nine baseline sites that were sampled on the Voigt land, only three of those nine would meet the standards. And this is typical of many native grasslands.
Meaning that they have a number of, a fair extent of introduced species, is that correct?
Meaning that the diversity and the seasonality requirements require a number of species, which is a separate issue than the introduced species present even.
And have studies been done evaluating livestock production on reclaimed land?
Yes.
I'm showing you what was marked as Exhibit 5. Did you prepare this exhibit?
Yes.
And could you please identify it?
It's a chart titled Livestock Weight Gain Study, and that was from data at Coteau. The study was done to compare cattle gains on reclaimed land and undisturbed land over a season. The result of the study was that the average daily gain was slightly higher from the cattle on the reclaimed land.
We would offer Kyle Creek Exhibit 5.
Mr. Broughton?
I object to foundation, both with respect to the exhibit and with respect to the witness's expertise to testify about livestock weight gain.
Mr. Biela, can you address some of the foundational issues?
Well, I guess, as she has testified, she holds a master's in rangeland management, so I think livestock weight gain certainly is right in her wheelhouse. Can you identify a little bit more where the information came from?
The calves, as part of a cow-calf pair, the calves were weighed prior to turnout in the spring in May, and then they were weighed again when they were taken off the land at the end of the season.
And these are records that were maintained or taken by Coteau?
Correct.
So you were able to access them and utilize them?
Correct.
Mr. Broughton?
I'm going to maintain my objection. I think that I can probably cover a lot on cross, though.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no objection.
Okay. I'll admit Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 5. Mr. Broughton, as you indicated, you can address a lot of these issues on cross, and the commission can give it the weight it deems appropriate. You can continue, Mr. Biela.
Now, what does the Coyote Creek Reclamation Plan provide with respect to the percentage of non-native grasses in the reclaimed grasslands?
Only native species will be seeded. Our seed mix includes nine native grass species and several forb species. The species included are similar to those found pre-mine. Our seed mix was developed in consultation with NRCS publications, data from the local NRCS office, and conversations I had with a representative of the USDA Plant Materials Center in Bismarck to specifically match the seed mix to the Coyote Creek site. Any non-native species present on reclaimed lands will come from pre-mined seeds that were present in the existing topsoil or that have invaded from the surrounding undisturbed land.
And if any introduced species are present on the reclaimed lands, what will Coyote Creek do to control them?
There are several options we have that we can use to control them. Seeding of native grassland can be delayed a year until or after respread, like Don mentioned, so that any introduced species that have germinated from the soil seed bank or from the seed that's present in the existing topsoil can be sprayed prior to seeding. Reclaimed native grassland will also be closely monitored for introduced grasses after the grassland seeded. And if after the first year or two introduced species are observed, they can be controlled through herbicide application.
And showing you Exhibit 6. Sarah, showing you Exhibit 6, can you please identify it?
It contains excerpts from the permit application pertaining to reclamation, revegetation, and reclaimed land management.
And all the materials contained in Exhibit 6 were submitted as part of the Coyote Creek mining application?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this point we would offer Exhibit 6, and the reason we have pulled this out is because while the mining permit application itself has been submitted on a CD, this is pertinent data pertaining to Ms. Flass' testimony, so, and it's directly from the permit app, so we would offer Exhibit 6.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I don't have any objection, but I have a question. Well, what was submitted was the final permit application after technical changes and stuff were made, correct? The earlier exhibit? So is this from that document or from the original app? I mean, we need that on the record of whether it's pulled from that final app because the original app isn't been submitted.
This is from the final approved permit application for NACC 1302.
Okay. I have no objection.
Okay. Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 6 is admitted.
And, Sarah, could you briefly summarize what these application excerpts pertain to?
Section 247, and there's several subsections, provides pre-mine native grassland data, including the NRCS ecological site descriptions. Section 311 provides an overview of operations that will occur in the proposed permit area. Section 3111 describes the salvage grading and respread of soils. Section 3112 is a mining methods narrative. Section 313 is a pit layout facilities map. Section 411 is the post-mining land use narrative. Section 421 discusses the revegetation and management of reclaimed lands. Section 422 contains seed mixes. And Section 431 discusses vegetation assessment and success standards.
Now, Mr. Voigt had expressed concerns that reclamation will not account for nutrient quality of reclaimed grasslands, especially protein yields. Do you agree with that?
No.
Why not?
Exhibit 5 demonstrates that livestock weight gains are better on reclaimed land. Additionally, it is the grass species present and their maturity that are the primary drivers of mineral content in forage, not the soils. The primary thing that changes chemically in a reclaimed soil is that organic matter and soil nitrogen may be slightly less immediately following respread if the soil has been stockpiled. In this situation, these decreases are short-term. As vegetation becomes reestablished and nutrient cycling resumes, organic matter and nitrogen levels return to pre-mine levels.
Now, showing you as marked as Exhibit 7, would you please identify it?
There are two documents included in the exhibit. The first is factors affecting the nutritive value of range and the Rancher's Guide to Grassland Management, with a specific excerpt entitled Range Nutrition.
And what is the source of these documents?
The first is a peer-reviewed article from the Journal of Range Management, and the second is an NDSU Extension Service publication.
And are these documents maintained by you and your professional working experience?
Yes.
And have you relied on these documents in preparation of your testimony today?
Yes.
I would offer Coyote Creek Exhibit 7.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 7 is admitted.
And what do these documents identify?
That's plant species and time of grazing is the most important factor in determining the nutritional value of the forage.
And so your point is what?
The primary driver in determining the nutrient quality of reclaimed grassland, including the protein, will be our seed mix and the resulting species composition.
Now, do you have information on the nutrient value of plant species currently found on Mr. Voigt's land compared to plant species you have included in your seed mix?
Yes.
Showing you exhibit label number 8. Would you please identify it?
It's titled The Grasses of the Northern Plains.
And what is the source of this document?
It's an NDSU Extension Service publication.
And is this maintained by you for your professional expertise?
Yes.
And have you relied on this document in preparation of your testimony today?
Yes.
We would offer Coyote Creek Exhibit 8.
Okay, I've just got two Exhibit 8s. Is that, did I just, oh, it's two volumes.
Oh, it's that exciting.
All right. Mr. Broughton, any objection?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Okay, Coyote Creek Exhibit number 8 is admitted.
And are the dominant species currently found on Mr. Voigt's land and those included in your seed mix listed in the permit application?
Yes.
Now, there has been no mining yet at the Coyote Creek Mine, so no grassland has been reclaimed. Is that correct?
Yes.
So any concerns at this stage as to the yield or nutrient quality of the grasslands to be reclaimed at Coyote Creek Mine are speculative at this time. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Voigt expressed concern in his testimony that standards generally require 12 inches of topsoil, 36 inches of subsoil to be respread, while native grasses have 7 to 8 feet of rooting depth. Do you agree with this?
No.
Why not?
Soil respread thickness is determined by sampling graded spoil. In accordance with the regulations, depending on the chemical and physical properties of the spoil, between 24 and 48 inches of soil is respread. However, all topsoil is salvaged and respread. And then subsoil makes up the difference between topsoil thickness and the total required thickness of soil respread. The reason 48 inches was established as the maximum respread thickness is because there was no research on soil respread that has ever found that greater thicknesses are required to maximize production. This maximum thickness doesn't also include a safety buffer of several inches. The paper I presented at the American Society of Mining Reclamation Annual Meeting was a literature review of this topic and included 55 sources. This research spans decades of work by many people in multiple states. In fact, pre-mine topsoil and subsoil on Voigt's land only average a total of 32 inches. So to make sure the mine salvages enough material to meet the 48-inch maximum thickness, additional material of equivalent quality to subsoil that is currently between 5 and 10 feet below the surface will be salvaged to supplement the Voigt subsoil.
Now, Dr. Merrill testified for the Voigt's recommended a survey of the reclaimed soils be done by a qualified soil scientist to create profiles to a depth of 4 feet. Is this being done?
Yes, the NRCS has completed a soil survey of reclaimed mine land, which includes creating profiles to a depth of 4 feet.
And does North Dakota's mining law require that native grasslands be reclaimed to a diverse, effective, and permanent cover of the same seasonal variety to the area and capable of a plant succession at least equal in extent of cover and productivity to the natural vegetation of the area?
Yes.
Does Coyote Creek intend to meet that standard?
Yes.
Is Coyote Creek mandated by law to meet that standard?
Yes, Coyote Creek is required by law to reclaim native grassland of equal quantity through production and cover standards, and required to meet equal quality through diversity and seasonality standards.
In your experience in working with grassland restoration in the area of Beulah, North Dakota, have the grasslands been restored to at least equal an extent of cover and productivity to natural vegetation of the area?
Yes.
Now, are you aware, does North Dakota law exceed federal law with respect to restoration of grassland productivity?
Yes, the federal law only requires that 90% of the pre-mine productivity be reestablished, whereas North Dakota law requires 100% of the pre-mine productivity.
I'm going to show you what is Voigt Exhibit Number 7, entitled Voigt Ranch Alfalfa. Have you reviewed this document prior to your testimony today?
Yes.
And can you tell me what observations you've drawn from this exhibit?
From my background, I would expect that any lowland hayfield would probably outproduce a hayfield on an upland, especially since the lowland fields would receive additional runoff, so additional moisture, have deeper soils, and especially in this case, the upland hay fields that are on the Voigt Ranch are sandy soils as well. So with that background information in mind, I went to the mining permit and I evaluated the soils of both fields and calculated an expected productivity difference between the fields, and to try to see just how much the difference in the soils would indicate that we would expect to see, regardless of whether there was sub-irrigation or not, because the NRCS data reflects dry land conditions since none of the soil map units were sub-irrigated. Looking at that, the expected yield difference between the two fields is that the lowland fields should produce about 76% more than the upland fields based on soils alone, with zero extra moisture contribution. Looking at this table that Voigt's submitted, I calculated an average difference of only a 47% increase in yields of the lowlands over the uplands. Again, compared to 76% is what we'd expect to see just because the soils are better. And then I also made some other notes, things that were worth looking at. 2012 was a dry year compared to the others, and the production on the lowland was considerably less than the other 5 years. We would expect that if it was receiving supplemental moisture that was separate from precipitation, that the production wouldn't have dropped off near as much.
You mean sub-irrigation when you say that?
Yes, yeah. And then also if the lowlands were sub-irrigated, I would expect to see a more similar production, less of a drop, less of a decline between the first and second cuttings. Just because of plant vigor, you would expect to see about a 25% drop under sub-irrigated conditions, whereas in this case, it's much more significant. Also, in 2013 and 14, it seemed odd that the uplands outproduced the lowlands for their first cutting.
Thank you. and showing you what is marked as Exhibit 10. Would you please identify it?
It is the mining permit that Coyote Creek Mine received.
From the North Dakota Public Service
From the North Commission. Dakota Public Service Commission.
And was this mining permit issued after the Public Service Commission's Reclamation Division approved of Coyote Creek's reclamation plan?
Yes.
And we would offer Exhibit Number 10.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no objection. I would note that it's two documents, though, correct? The permit and the conditions?
Yes.
You've got two paper clipped together. Is that what you intended?
Yes.
Brian?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. We were going to ask to admit those also. So. No objection.
Okay. Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 10 is admitted.
And is it the request of Coyote Creek Mining Company that this mining permit be affirmed?
Yes.
We have no further questions of this witness.
Mr. Broughton?
If I may, Your Honor, we've been going about an hour, and this is one of those times I would like to consult with my expert, so if we could take one of our breaks now, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Biella?
Well, I guess we would object. I mean, we've only been going an hour, and we have a lot to do yet, so I would request we keep going.
Well, Mr. Broughton had indicated prior that, well, I guess I don't think it was an agreement, I guess, but he indicated that he would like an opportunity. He would withhold his objection to, what was it, Mr. Broughton? I mean, I'm just so I can get an understanding of what the agreement between the parties was.
My understanding was that Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco was asking about having her staff and experts questioning witnesses, and I indicated that I understood how that can be helpful, but I think it's unfair for one party to be able to do that and not another. And so what I had asked at that time is that I would withhold my objection if I would have the right within reason to consult with my experts prior to cross-examination.
Well, and I think that is reasonable. I think we will allow a very brief break. I did, on this second day of the hearing, I did allow Coyote Creek a brief opportunity to confer with someone before asking a question. I think that's reasonable in this case. It doesn't prejudice Coyote Creek in any way. So I will allow a very brief break for Mr. Broughton to consult. And it is a logical time. We have been taking testimony for approximately a little over an hour for each of the witnesses and taking a break at that point. So I think we'll continue with that, and we'll take approximately 10 minutes, I guess, at this time, and then we'll come back and allow cross-examination.